Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and I'm joined by my co-host, Austin Chadwick. And today we are talking to Dana and Brian Finster, and we're going to talk a little bit about keeping your continuous delivery environment up and running using mob programming. And so I just wanted to kind of ask for you to introduce yourselves, talk about a little bit about what you do and and the relationship to mobbing. Yeah, please go ahead.
So I've been a software developer for longer than I care to admit. I currently lead an enterprise DevOps dojo where we help teams learn how to execute continuous delivery and help them build tools to make sure they're doing good at it. That's me. So.
Yeah, and I also have been a developer for a couple decades and working currently on a development team practicing continuous delivery. So, especially in the remote world, it's a good way to connect. So.
Very cool. And maybe I guess the first bit of it, since we're mob programming podcast sort of thing, is where did mobbing come into play? Or maybe is there any backstory that we need leading up to the mobbing that you could maybe introduce us to?
You know, for me, suddenly we were sent home one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, my team, while we do teach other teams, you know, we're technical coaches, but we also develop because we practice what we preach, but we're co-located. We're all sitting next to each other. We're operating as an actual product team. And suddenly we weren't there every day and we lost situational awareness. Mm. You didn't have the environment of developing anymore. And I was feeling completely lost for a week. And then we had I had an opportunity to do an exercise with Woody Zoll on mob programming with the Dojo Consortium to try to experiment with different techniques of engagement and found that might be the solution to the problem. And so I brought it back to the team and we tried it and really liked it. And it got us our situational awareness back.
Nice.
To get our integration cadence or release cadence up again.
So I guess what was the implementation or how did you take that new idea, introduce it to the team? How did the team take it, and then and maybe what problems did it solve?
Oh well, I mean, so my team, we're all very, very open to trying new things that might solve problems. I mean, we have a problem, see if this solves it. We'll run an experiment and see, right? And we set up a cadence that was longer than Woody would normally do. You know, Woody's generally a 5 to 10 minute cadence. We were doing more like 15 or 20 just because of the lag of pushing code up through the VPN, pulling it back down, say, because we couldn't, the way we were operating, we couldn't like share screen.
Yeah.
And so to switch drivers took lag. Okay. I think, and we learned some stuff along the way, but that was it. We just took what it was, adjusted to our environment and started playing with it to see what we could get done.
Okay. Fantastic. So the team, it sounds like the team, maybe has like a psychologically safe environment, you know, feedback and things are not taken personally, or something along those lines where experiments are good to go, right?
Well, I mean, we are the DevOps dojo, and if we're going to teach people how to do DevOps, we have to absolutely express culture, automation, lean metrics, and sharing constantly. So if we want to be on a psychologically safe team, we're the one.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So you're suddenly remote. Things are kind of sliding out of place. You're able to suggest this new idea. The team takes it on and they start working this way.
Including me. I mean, yeah. I'm lead the team, but I'm also on the team.
Yes. Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. So what did you start noticing when this started playing out, I guess? What was the good? What was the bad when you first started doing it and how did it mature?
So I think the good was, you know, we had a relatively junior developer on the team, and it started accelerating his learning pretty rapidly. That was really good. There were some mistakes we made around duration, because it was absolutely exhausting, because it's really difficult to step away because we're all focusing on it. And so the sorry, we had to make some adjustments from that. But, you know, and we started finding that mobbing was really good for when we're trying to do something new or when we're trying to solve a really hard problem. And then we started drifting into more pair programming for just the day to day. And so there's a lot of pair programming going on right now.
Okay.
We'll come back together and mob.
Yeah. And, I guess, what caused, you know, so this is a question that I think I hear a lot, and maybe we'll jump to Austin's questions. I've been asking a lot. One thing I see often, and I've seen this with certain companies doing mobbing, is that they mob for a while and they split up. Like, what causes you to pair versus mob, or what do you use as a method of initiating that or not?
I think it's just if the problem's not interesting enough for everybody to be focused on it.
Okay, cool. Very good.
Right on. Yeah. One, I had two questions come to mind was, I guess I wanted to hear more about your environment before, because you were saying that when you went remote, it exposed a problem in the environment where you weren't able to do something. So what was your environment before remote? And that kind of filled the gap, so to speak, that mobbing later came to help out with.
I mean, our whole working environment is set up for teams collaborating together. So it's not like hoteling or open, it's open office, but everything's set up in team horseshoes. So mm-hmm. teams are all have the ability to work together. And you can hear what's going on and you can hear if somebody has a problem, right? And you can just spin around and just instantly meet and solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And when you're not, you know, we tried going full-time Zoom immediately after we got sent home, and that didn't really work. It was very distracting. We're all doing our own thing, and it's not the same, right? So mobbing gave us that back. It gave us that collaboration that we were missing.
Okay, cool. Right on. That helps explain. Yeah, especially if you're leading, teaching, and you know, also working and helping to inspire others with DevOps.
For my team, it wasn't as drastic as the shift because we already have one person on our team that's in another state. So, and relatively recently brought on to join the team. So, we already had a lot of like inclusive Zoom meetings and inclusive things set up. But then, you know, the same kind of thing where, especially when you're remote, by introducing the mobbing, it helps with that, collaboration. It's really helps enforce the collaboration that you naturally get sitting next to each other. So,
right on. Very cool.
Was there anything that was hard about implementing mobbing when you decided to experiment with it, or besides, I guess, the sharing of the code on the screen? What kind of speed bumps do you run into?
I can tell you from my perspective, because my team, I'm not going to say that we effectively mob every single time, because it's very hard to get that flow going where you're switching appropriately and everybody's getting those opportunities to be a driver and a navigator. When you have strong personalities on a team, they tend to take over, and enforcing those roles is something that we as a team still kind of struggle with. And I think, some of the team still doesn't quite understand that this is how this works. You know, they never come because you're used to collaborating. You know, my team is used to collaborating, used to doing, you know, like lunch and learns or troubleshooting things via Zoom together, things like that. And I think you fall back into that sometimes pretty easily, is staying focused in on the mobbing aspect.
Yeah, on my team, we, I lead the team, but it's just a role on the team.
Yeah.
And we all have very strong personalities. But the way that expresses itself is we hold each other very accountable to what we're trying to get done.
Very cool.
And so if somebody starts squirreling or someone starts working outside their role in the mob, they'll get shut down. Very respectful.
Very respectful way.
Nice. Psychological safety, right?
You know, yeah.
As long as you're free to raise issues. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like, Brian, you were saying you kind of addressed the problem of someone dominating, or it kind of sounded like, Dana, that people were kind of falling back into kind of like the driver and the watchers kind of thing, where someone drives and everyone else just kind of hangs back and is quiet. Is that accurate? Is that kind of what you've seen? Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen that happen. Unless we're really pushing for it, it kind of turns into that. We start scrolling down something and someone's driving and they get it, and then we have.
How have you seen the team pull themselves out of that, or have you?
Yeah. Similar to what Brian just said, is you really have to have at least a couple of people, at least one, if not a couple of people on the team, really focused on reining it back in and just saying, hey, you've been driving enough. Hey, you're talking, you're not navigating.
You're a driver, you have no opinions.
Yeah. We do have a pretty good, we have a good culture within our team, and we do have a good psychological safety. We also have some people who are newer to working on a development team and working as a development team. So that's, I think it's really helped overall, though, when you have that situation of having people who are more used to doing their own thing, or have come in maybe from a different role and are starting to do development. Mobbing gives an opportunity to really help them understand, and this is where it comes into the continuous integration process and continuous delivery as well, because if you have people who aren't used to that, and when you're mobbing together and you're committing and going, okay, now this piece is ready for production, let's push it, and everyone on the team starts to get a better sense of what CI and CD really mean.
Yeah.
Not, oh, let's go finish this, we mobbed for a while, let's go finish this feature on our own, you do this part, you do that part, and then we'll merge it. It's okay, we just did this, let's push it to production before we're done. And this is, it helps us teach that flow, teach it. It helps people actually feel it to implement it like that as a group.
So, well, there's one thing I think is really important is that, I've been a developer for a long, long time. I've seen Woody talk before about mob programming. I was extremely skeptical of it and would not have actually started it at all. Like the emergency of I'd lost visibility.
Yeah.
And the team was siloing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's important for people to understand. This is not something like, oh yeah, let's try a new thing. It's like, I need to solve this problem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's been one of our key things, is we focus on breaking up silos fairly often. And in that, I think even when mobbing started, it was very much, there were silos on the team that all needed to come together to get something across the finish line, sort of thing. And so, that makes a lot of sense. I heard you talking about this idea of using mobbing as a way to provide everyone an example of what it means to start something and bring it all the way to the finish line, so to speak, in the CI/CD world. I guess, have you noticed any patterns related to continuous delivery that emerged from your work with the mobs, specifically around, maybe positive effects that mobbing has had on your pipelines, or obviously you have the understanding of the pipeline increasing. Is there any more to that that you can think of?
I think for me anyway, it's given me, one of the other things we're responsible for is showing people how to measure this stuff correctly.
Yeah.
But it's blowing metrics out of the water, because we've been, one of the ways we measure the team's effectiveness as working as a team is commits per day per dev. The number of commits drop. Deploys stay up, but the number of commits drop. And so I have to figure out how to adjust for that.
Sure.
But it's honestly, this sounds like bragging, but it's not. My team's really good at CD.
That's good.
I mean, we've been practicing it for a long time. Before we even had this as a team, we were doing it on teams elsewhere in the enterprise. That's why we were assigned to this, right? So it didn't improve our CD. It did improve our ability to cross train and to focus and get situational awareness and stop the bleeding.
Yeah. And sometimes that's the tool that you need for the job. I would say that another aspect of it, or a metric that I can throw out there is essentially bug frequency. So if your release frequency is high and your bug frequency is low, then that could expose some benefit, some hidden benefit that might be.
It also did short circuit the value stream because we didn't have to go through the code review step.
Yes, there you go. That's what I was looking for. That's the gold. you have a bunch of developers right now listening to this going, wait, I don't have to do the code review.
Yes.
So, nice.
I think with less mature team, we are able to mob and, or not as disciplined. I'm going to say that like, I work in a less disciplined environment. it tends to sometimes go in the direction of, what's easy right now sometimes. But when you're doing it all together, there's a much more tendency to actually hold each other more accountable. Mm-hmm. When you see a pull request come in and maybe the tests are not quite sufficient, but we'll let it go. But when you're doing it together and you're thinking, well, wait, we didn't cover this case, let's do this. And then that helps, not just to get it done and not miss things or let things slide, but it also helps build up the habits that the team is looking for and gets everyone on the same page.
No, that's actually an important point. I've done pair programming before with somebody at like 11 o'clock at night because we were each working on defects, but we were cross-code reviewing. And it wasn't really pair programming, but we were working together on these problems. And that accountability, it's you actually hold yourself more accountable to tests when it's right now. It's like, well, okay, I'm in the code review. I've got the stuff to do. And I'm just going to let it slide because I just don't want to deal with it. Right? I think that's true.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that in myself and in others where when it's code review, it's much easier to let it slide. And I've heard many developers say that before when I was with teams at previous places where, it's the Thursday before the end of the sprint and we have the demo tomorrow and we got to call this done. And so, we'll just the approval rate on code reviews was much higher.
Let me tell you, one of my favorite stories to tell about being on a high performing team is when you are under the wire, you've got a production defect, it's 11 o'clock at night, you know you're on a high performing team when your teammate won't just rubber stamp your code review.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the same thing can still happen in mobbing, right? You can just rubber stamp whatever you're doing right now as a mob, but I agree with you that I felt like it's easier to speak up when it's because we're already looking at it. I just have to say something. It doesn't have to be this, and then I got to submit a comment in the code review and then it's going to bounce back and then I wait for them to respond. Yeah, you don't have to wait for any back and forth. We just solve it now and then move on, right? I wanted to bring it back to one thing. I always find it fascinating. I was a skeptic with mobbing. I think everyone was. What were your biggest concerns about mobbing before? You said you heard about it before, but it wasn't something you were considering trying until it was almost forced upon you by a problem. I would like to explore that a little bit more. I'm just always fascinated here.
I've never seen it demoed. I have seen mobbing attempts before where there was a lot of people standing around board. Right. I think it was the experience of doing it online with Woody and a bunch of strangers and watching, seeing how it could actually work and how people stay engaged and just the things that you experience when you see one who's experienced at it, do it. and you pick up tips that you never would have gotten from, this is what it looks like on paper, right? Mm-hmm. And seeing it was very effective. And also that seeing a bunch of strangers come together and solve problems where we'd never worked together before and just clicking as a team very rapidly.
Some people never worked in the language.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
not even in the same
language. Good to have the hands-on process. And I feel like I really actually want to get some of my team involved in one of those sessions because a lot of them are going on across Zoom. Different people are holding them. Because I think it helps really to teach by example and really understand.
It's like process. I compare it to getting your guild together and going on a raid.
Ah, yeah, there we go. Speaking my language now. Yeah.
Nice. Right on. One other follow-up I had, and forgive me if I misunderstood. The way I read what you guys were saying was that there were, I almost envisioned like a story or an event where a mob came together to keep the CD running or something like that. Was there a story along those lines? If not, it's okay. I just wanted to bring it up.
No, I mean, that's what I was saying is that I was watching things slip, right? Mm-hmm. I was watching the metrics deteriorate. I was watching people struggle more with clarity, what was going on, mm-hmm. watching things slip, right? And also, I knew that I was feeling completely detached from the team. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a good feeling, especially when you're used to being a team instead of a bunch of people that kind of coding on the same things.
Yeah.
For CI and CD to work, you really have to have that cohesiveness. So if you start to lose that cohesiveness, that's where it can come in and kind of glue everybody back together and, you know, get everybody focused and keep things moving.
Yeah, I saw the metrics pretty quick.
What I guess what were the physical manifestations of that? Was it just frameworks were going out, you know, not being added to the pipelines or like?
No, I mean, tasks were taking longer, pull requests were taking longer to process. You know, there was more questions about what does this really mean? You know, it's just stuff that you see where there's less collaboration going on, less flow. You know, there's CI is all about the flow of information, and we had lost the information flow.
Hmm. Now that's very fair. Yeah. I have myself experimented with pairing and mobs, you know, splitting up and going down to pairs, but keeping the Zoom chat on to stay, you know, kind of collaboration. I guess it's not like you were saying before, you had everyone on the team with the Zoom meeting on and it was too disruptive with all the noise. So I guess since you're not doing that, how do you help the pairs coordinate or the mobs or the solo people coordinate when they're not pairing or mobbing, so to speak?
I mean, they just get on Slack and they talk to each other and then they spin up a Zoom to talk to each other and they just do what they want to do, right? I mean, we're very self-organizing.
We very often will start our day after stand-up with like, this is the thing that we really need to dig into today. Here's the Zoom meeting. Get on when you can if you can help out with this. Where just in the middle of the day, someone might just hop on Slack and throw a Zoom out there and say, hey, I'm coding on this. This is kind of an interesting thing. I'm going to be working on it if you want to come join me.
Nice. And there's enough participation that just people are able to set what they're working aside to go and work with them on that thing. And that's okay in that environment.
We're all working on the same future. So.
Sounds good.
You can't do CD and have all this whip going on. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
On shipping as a team.
Yeah.
On shipping as a team, you're not going to do CD.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have individual roles and or in pairs, and when that Slack message goes out with the Zoom link, you are you're effectively increasing the flow of communication and getting to delivery faster by you know, even, and the limited WIP environment allows that to happen in a way that people aren't sacrificing their own personal image to go and mob because they're not working on what they are supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're executing CD, your image is your team's deliverables.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? If you're focused on your personal image, you're not going to be a good teammate on a team trying to execute CD.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And very often we're learning something or we're working on something where, you know, if someone's working on creating an API call or a new endpoint, and then someone's working on something in the database to go with that, and someone's working on the front end to go with that or another endpoint, it's also really helpful just to get together. And this is why, I guess, because we work as a team this way generally, you know, it's not like we're really shifting off. It's like, oh, you're going in this direction with this. Let me make sure we're good. Or, you know, obviously if we're changing something, that's important. But we also try to make sure that if we're doing, like, for example, our team hasn't worked in front end in a while. And so a lot of times if we're starting to code on that, we'll just throw a Zoom out there so that people can get on so that the next time a UI card's the top one on the backlog, you know, someone who has never worked in it before can kind of go, okay, I know what this is because I've touched it and we've been in it and we've been doing things. So it helps to keep everybody up to speed on what's going on in all the different, right? My team happens to support a lot of different products, so, and different languages, so.
Yeah, and you know what, that's really inspiring what you're sharing. I think I just kind of had an aha moment of the synergy of continuous delivery and mobbing, right? So a lot of the things you were establishing in your culture before you started mobbing really enabled, you know, the collaboration for pairing or mobbing to happen, because mobbing is not an end in and of itself, right? You're trying to have flow, you're trying to have, you know, deliver value often, and, you know, so... You know, like you had a culture where it like I can think of opposites. I've recently been talking to developers who are kind of in an opposite culture. Their cultures incentivize the opposite things, right? So if they invite someone to pair a mob with them, it's going to make their personal metrics look bad. And so the culture around them incentivizes them to have more things in progress and more waiting,
but
right?
And so even in that culture, you can become more of a team within that culture if, you know, person A stops and programs with person B, and then they turn around and do it the other way and they work on the other person's work. But then eventually maybe that can become work that they're working on together toward a goal.
No, I mean,
maybe that's a progression.
Straight up, if I'm punished for trying to help the team deliver better, I'll quit. I mean, because the I'm working on a deck right now for why teams can't execute CD.
Yeah,
individual metrics are one of the key reasons why companies are killing themselves. It's just shooting yourself in the foot to judge individuals instead of team output.
Yeah,
or outcomes. Right.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that in environments where I've seen the focus be put on the individual, I've only seen really bad stuff happen, and friendships deteriorate and people get at each other's throats for whatever reason. And so a big reason that that we do things the way that we do is because we can, we know how to avoid problems like that. It's just uncommon in our industry, I think.
I actually wrote a blog post about, you know, how to organize teams around delivery.
Yeah.
And that if you have a situation like that, you don't have a team. You have a bunch of co-located people that are a pandemonium of developers. That's my group name for that, is a pandemonium. Murder of crows.
Yeah. Nice. I love it. Yeah. And it's like a conglomerate or something, right? Yeah. Yeah. One thing that jumped out to me as you were speaking too, you know, people might have the missing impression, or if that's a word, we love mobbing. You know, we have a show about it. It might be expected that we mandate mobbing, right? Like, you know, you have to mob everything, right? But actually, in truth, the culture matches more what you're speaking about, where, hey, we emphasize self-organization, the teams decide, right? And so obviously we've hired for people who like to collaborate and have low whip and those kind of things and para mob. The team decides, you know, so, you know, sometimes my mob will flux to everybody in the mob, you know, up to four or five people is working on the same exact thing, what you would think of as mobbing. And other times we'll split up because the work dictates that. And, you know, you can't automate something that a mob could automate, or we're in the progress of automating it and one pair is automating and one person's doing it manually, you know, so you kind of flex to the problem as needed. And it's just amazing to have a culture that allows that. And it sounds like you guys have a similar thing going. And so kudos to you guys for establishing that kind of culture.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's one of the things I push when I'm working with different areas, especially speaking of leadership, is that if you push for implementation, you are now responsible for quality. If you push for outcomes, the teams are now responsible for quality. Mm-hmm. So given the outcomes you want, given the freedom to execute, and then make them owners of the quality.
Yeah. And somehow that gradually ends up providing a platform where people might, I speak to a lot of people that basically think that in their environment, mobbing could never work because, right. And so it kind of makes sense. Like Austin was saying, is that if you enable a environment that can do well with CD, then you have gotten past many of the hurdles necessary to maybe get into a good patterns of mobbing kind of spot.
Well, I would say that if you're in an environment where mobbing isn't an option, you can't do CD.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all related to the culture, right? I mean, continuous delivery is about the flow of information.
Yep.
We want you to do CD, but then you've taken away our ability to do it by saying that we have to work the way you want us to work. Yep. And you don't know how to do CD or you'd be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also reminds me of something. I don't know if you've seen Arlo Belshi's like engineering practices chart. It's like this ginormous mind map of like technical practices and team practices and all these things leading up, and the far right of the chart is where you want to be with like zero bugs, continuous delivery, and that kind of thing. But what's other than just being like, whoa, there's a lot going on in this diagram, I think it illustrates how much needs to be going on, not as well technically with tools and that kind of thing. So a lot of people hear continuous delivery, they think tools, right?
CP not Inkle Jenkins.
Install a tool and you're doing continuous delivery, right? But all these cultural team, collaboration, testing, and then all those things can help lead to continuous delivery, right? It's not, you know, a one thing and you do it. There's all these different elements, technical and not, that help enable it, right? And to get you there.
Yeah, all an integrated system. You know, it's interesting, when we first focused on it, I built a dependency diagram for CD and talked about tools that were enabled by behavior and behavior that was required to execute CD. I pulled it all by just deep diving into Jez and Dave's book.
Yeah.
And just said, okay, we're going to have to figure this out. So we have to find a map.
Yeah. Right? Do you have that on a blog somewhere? That might be interesting to people to see.
I don't. I still have the diagram. I mean, I built it in like 2015. I still have the diagram.
If you're happy to share it, then I think that people in the audience might like it too.
Yeah, it's still true.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be true to say 2015.
Nice. Well, that might be a good way to end the show. Before we officially close out, is there anything you guys like to share or plug before we call this a wrap?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't plug that I've been selected to talk about the DevOps Dojo Consortium. I'm sorry, the Dojo Consortium at DevOps Enterprise Summit London in June, although it will be remote.
Yeah.
So I'd encourage everybody, if they haven't attended that conference, this is a very inexpensive way to attend this year. And there's awesome speakers. I've been for the last 5 years to Vegas, go to that conference.
Yeah, fantastic. We'll put the link in the notes.
For sure. Okay. You have anything?
No.
Okay. All right.
Well, yeah. So, Dan and Brian, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your story. To all of our listeners, you know, this might have struck a chord with you, or maybe you thought of somebody that could really use a listen of this particular episode, maybe trying to implement continuous delivery in their environments. So be sure to share this episode with them. All right. And be sure to like and subscribe, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.